is my way. You shoot to kill. We're gonna get bloody on this one, Roger. Are you really crazy? Or are you as good as you say you are?
Hello, Now Playing listeners. This is Arnie, and I hope you're having a good week. Summer is here. While it doesn't technically start for a few more weeks, school is out, kids are playing, and movies are hitting fast and furious. Well, actually, we get a Fast and Furious in August, but Men in Black, X-Men, Dark Phoenix, Toy Story 4 is on the way. It's a huge summer of movies. But it didn't used to be that there was a blockbuster every single week. Really? That was a trend that started in the very late 80s. Specifically, you could look at the summer of 1989. That had so many films that we've reviewed as part of our franchises. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Star Trek V, Batman, Back to the Future 2, Ghostbusters 2, The Fly 2, Pet Sematary, Fright Night Part 2, Ghostbusters 2, Karate Kid 3, Friday the 13th Part 8, Nightmare on Elm Street 5, Halloween 5. 1989 was a big year for films, but not all of them were franchise films, and that's why we're doing a special 30th anniversary retrospective series looking back at the summer hits of 1989. Some of that year's top-grossing films were Dead Poets Society and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, plus movies that had a great impact on culture and society, like Do the Right Thing, Sex, Lies, and Videotape, The Abyss. But one of that year's top-grossing films was Lethal Weapon 2, that took the franchise and really set the tone for all the Lethal Weapon films to follow. The first one had been a little bit of a sleeper hit, but the second film came out and made over $200 million back when that meant something. And that's one where we don't feel we can just cover one film. And so, as our Platinum Donation series this summer, we have done the Lethal Weapon Retrospective series. Now, all four of those episodes are out and available for you to listen to right now. Jacob Stewart and I look at all four of the Richard Donner films starring Mel Gibson and Danny Glover and weigh in on exactly if they are too old for this shit. Here's some brief clips from each of those four reviews, and then I'll be back to tell you how to get the entire series as well as all of our other bonus reviews we're doing this summer. Today we're discussing Lethal Weapon.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Certainly one of the hallmarks of any Shane Black movie, I think, that I can ever think of, and certainly The Imitators as well, is that he likes to bring Christmas into the equation.
And when was this released? This is a summer movie, right?
Nope, March 6th, 1987.
Oh, March! Okay, really far away from Christmas, okay.
Or it's just a belated Christmas gift. I think I've actually been sending out Christmas gifts in March a couple of years, but I wonder if this is something he did because you associate Christmas with depression. You know, one of the big tropes to say is there's a lot of suicides around the Christmas holiday, and I wonder if because Lethal Weapon was such a success for him, if he keeps Christmas in there as a lucky charm.
I read an interview by Shane Black, and he talked about why he used Christmas. He said it's just this unifying factor, is that we all, at least in, you know, North America and European countries, we understand Christmas, and there's feelings associated with that, and so it's kind of a shorthand to get you to just care about everyone, because it just puts you in that Christmas mood.
Not only that, but I think it's subversive. If you're going to tell a Christmas story, usually you're going to warm the heart. You're not going to have a woman coke up and jump off a ledge and splat on the ground.
God, I miss the 80s with the gratuitous nudity of coked out whores. And I'm not saying that derogatorily. She really is a working girl. But her hair, her tits, her cocaine, it's all so 80s. Why can't we go back to that simpler time?
Well, and it's also perfect even when she lands on top of a car. She should be a pile of meat and blood. But no, that titty's still hanging out. That hair's still totally 80s with those curls and big and everything.
Yeah, it feels like the opener to a TV, sans the nudity and the excessive drug use. But this is usually how they hook you with a one-hour drama. It's like we see a beautiful woman die under mysterious circumstances, and that's our entry into a detective case. I'm going to argue it's really just titillation. There's really no good reason why Amanda is here flashing us other than Shane Black is want to enjoy that.
There's a lot of scenes that I feel like, if you're writing this and you wanted a tight story, there's a lot of stuff that you wouldn't have here. But that's sometimes the fun of a movie, is when it kind of just meanders and it goes around the place. And that is one of the things that I can at least appreciate with this first Lethal Weapon, is because it does feel so unconventional. You never kind of really know where it's going. You think, oh, we got to solve this suicide hooker. And no, now we're going to go to another guy trying to jump off a building, or we're going to go do this. It takes its own path and time to get where it needs to go.
I believe this movie to be excessively confusing.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad that's not just me, because I've seen this one, I think this is my third time, and I just feel confused every time I do watch it.
It is really tenuous how you start with a coked up hooker taking a dive from a balcony, and you end with ex-Vietnam vets, special forces, setting off bombs and doing martial arts. I can walk us through this. I understand every link in the chain. I understand Dixie the hooker, who has two lines in the movie and yet is integral to the plot, and I don't blame anyone who doesn't remember who the hell Dixie the hooker is. I can answer all of it, but I believe part of the allure of this is its labyrinthian plot.
Well, okay, I know where you're going to come in on this. I can say it's labyrinthian when I like the movie, and when I don't like the movie, it's a shitty script. I tend to go on the other side. That was my first impression. When I first saw this movie, the recording 5 years ago, I had never seen this film. My understanding was that it was a dark, serious drama. And then when I got there, I was like, I thought I knew what I was getting for Christmas, and I opened this box and it's just ridiculous. So I really had expectations that were unmet in the script department. And I think you're right to warn people away from looking too closely at the plot. It's just not tightly wound.
Maybe you would have liked Black's original script. I mean, that didn't open with a hooker on a balcony. It opened with Riggs drunk in a bar alone and getting into a fight with people and kicking their ass.
It's a noir movie. There is a part of this that has a link back to detective fiction. And detective fiction, you know, it's called misogynistic, and I guess I get that. It oftentimes is predicated on terrible things happening to women characters. That usually is a hook for the story. So this is in keeping with a long tradition, really, by having this death here in this way. I'm just going to argue this character really never has any value to the story that they do want to tell.
No, she could die off screen. And Murtaugh's still going to get involved because he knows her dad. Just happenstance. Yeah, we don't need to see this.
Admittedly, if it wasn't so convoluted, this whole beginning could just be an episode of Miami Vice.
You could cut this scene entirely, except they don't want to lose the titty shot. But the only characters they care about are the men. The only ones that matter are really these two men that they're going to contrast. For the next 20 minutes, we're going to get two versions of an LA cop. A family man and a loose cannon.
And the confusion continues for me as we're introduced to Murtaugh. It's his 50th birthday. He's taking a bath, not a big bubble bath that's like covering all his naughty bits. And that family's just walking in, singing a song. Like, can you just have them bring him breakfast in bed, singing a song? Why is he got to be in the bath? And they're hanging out. And that teenage daughter's just like, after they all leave, she's hanging out, talking to him. It's weird choices to me.
She's talking about the gray in his beard. I'm just happy she's not talking about the gray in his pubes that are quite obviously visible from her angle.
Yes, his dick is just floating there in front of her.
All right, is it weird that I've seen all my family members naked? I mean, I had that experience growing up.
I know, I had friends that, yes, it's just weird to me because that would not happen in my house.
Understood. Well, I'm more weirded out by the fact that this family is not the Cosby kids. They look just like them. They totally transported that show, which had just debuted to giant ratings the year before, and they stuck them in here as a way of telling us why we should love instantly Roger Murtaugh. He is my identifiable character, conservative family man, likable, worried about getting older, 50 years old, so I got to go to the firing range and make sure that I can still shoot. My beard's got gray, so I'm going to make it a mustache.
Today we're discussing Lethal Weapon 2.
This is the movie that really makes Gibson. I mean, we've been talking about like big things are on the horizon. Not really. Lethal Weapon 2 is to date one of his most successful movies of all time. If you added up the three previous blockbusters that he had in his career, which would have been Mad Max Thunderdome, the first Lethal Weapon, and Tequila Sunrise, the sex thriller where he showed his ass again with Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, at all three of those grosses, and it wouldn't equal what Lethal Weapon 2 does.
Yeah, I read this was in 1989, this was number three in the box office, just after Batman and Indiana Jones, Lethal Weapon.
And again, I was dumbstruck. I was blindsided by this film because I'd never heard of the original.
Here's the thing. The original only made 65, and this one is making close to 150. What changes that dynamic? I think two things. One, they do back away from the Shane Blackness of it all. But two, don't discount the popularity of VCRs.
Mm-hmm.
That had a lot to do with the ability for people to find the film. Renting movies had become a thing, and Lethal Weapon was one of the movies that benefited. Had it come out in a different time, it wasn't successful enough to get a sequel. But because it had rented well, they knew that they could make more the second time out. And boy, did they. What I most wondered seeing it again now is the perspective of they can't have Mel Gibson trying to put a gun in his mouth again, right? That got resolved. They can't go back. I mean, they could go back to it if it was a formula that worked, but it would be sad if they regressed the character, that nothing that impacted him last time had changed his misanthropic attitude. You have to make him different, but in doing so, isn't part of the success the fact that these cops got a bicker?
We said with the last review that that is the movie that defined and epitomized the buddy cop genre. I think it's this one, actually. I think this is the one, now that they're just the Bickersons here, that is the buddy cop formula, not the I'm going to kill myself and I'm going to retire partners.
You got to walk the line of he's still crazy, but not psychotic. Like, you can't have the edge be too sharp. That's not sexy. That's not the character that you built to. And so what is the relationship going to be? This is a movie where plot doesn't matter. Arnie, go ahead and give it to us. But what really I'm interested in about Lethal Weapon 2 is how the chemistry and the formula for their relationship is going to change.
Today we're discussing Lethal Weapon 3.
I actually saw this movie. This is the only Lethal Weapon movie I saw in a theater, sort of, against my will, sort of. I think, Arnie, you tried to get me there. You proclaimed, after emerging from the theater, it was the greatest movie of all time.
I do remember this conversation. I went to see Lethal Weapon 3. I think I'd invited you, and you were like, hell no, I don't want to see that movie.
Correct.
And so I went alone. It was 1992. I was between high school and college.
Yep.
I had a car. I was able to drive myself out to the theater and watch it alone. And man, did it adrenalize me. I just went on this rockin' trip and I raced home driving unsafe like I often do after action movies. Went back to my room, called Stuart up and went, this is the greatest movie of all time. And I think half of it was, fuck you for not coming to see this movie with me. Mm. I do think that was a portion of it, to be honest.
It was just a con. You're just trying to make him jealous for missing the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, I was Tom Sawyering Lethal Weapon 3.
I wasn't convinced. I didn't go when the movie ran in summer 1992. But as you mentioned, I was going to college. And in the fall, I was desperate to make new friends in a new town, people I was living with. I ascribed a lot of importance to this certain clique because they were not small time like the high school kids I knew. They came from the big city of Chicago. They dressed alternative. They listened to alternative music. They didn't like sports. I'm like, I finally found my people. And then they suggested going to the student union and seeing Lethal Weapon 3 for the second time. They had seen it over the summer and they're like, you're going to love it. We got to all go. And I'm like, but huh? You're alternative. Like, alternative people don't go and watch mainstream action movies. Keep in mind, I was there in college to go to film school. And film school has a very high degree of snobbery. You don't do Lethal Weapon 3. You certainly don't pay for it. And I think, you know, it's the student union. This is a second-run movie theater, which probably some of our audience don't even know that movies used to take about 6 to 8 months to go to VHS, and you could go see see a movie in between for like $2 or $3 at a junky movie theater.
It used to be the dollar cinema, and then they raised the prices, but we still always called it the dollar cinema, even when it was $3.
But I wasn't going to pay $3, $1, no dollar for Lethal Weapon 3. I was horrified, and I couldn't understand why these cool alternative people wanted me to go see that. It was actually a great lesson. I actually look back at that as a really formative lesson on the hypocrisy of trying to define yourself by your taste. Like, it never works. People are complicated. They can like cool things and uncool things. You all do, I do. And so don't pretend because a person dresses a certain way that they're going to be some avatar for perfect taste. They're either lying or they have a secret side where they love Care Bears. You know, that's just the way it is. But they dragged me there. I didn't want to go. I'm like, I really don't think I will like it. And they're like, oh, you'll like it.
They didn't know you very well, did they?
They didn't know me. And I think they were very high. So, like, they were very, very, like, everything. They were laughing, screaming. Like, it was like going to church in Harlem. They were having a religious experience. And I'm like, do I fake it? I got to be me. And that's, I think, maybe, hopefully, why people will listen to me. I know they don't always agree with me, but I'm always going to tell you what I think. I'm not going to fake it. I'm not going to pretend. I sat there with...
Today, we're discussing Lethal Weapon 4.
Guys, I'm going to say right now, we got a long movie to talk about. Don't be a don't be. Be a doobie. Let's be positive about Lethal Weapon 4.
I wish I had a doobie to get through this film.
Didn't Danny Glover and Joe Pesci already make a movie called Gone Fishing?
Yes.
Where they're on a boat and being yucking up. I guess we get the added factor if we get Mel here, but this feels like a pickup to that film when we jump, however much it is, 9 months, almost 9 months, we jump to the plot point in which their boat is going to come across the ship full of Chinese fugitives.
And Leo's going to stay in this plot because now he's a private investigator. I honestly think this could become a good running gag. Is every movie, he's in some completely different, unrelated line of business.
No, I don't want that gag. I don't want more films.
I actually feel like I'm now on board with you guys. Up to this point, Pesci hasn't bothered me this much, but he really is not needed in this film.
He's not, but he doesn't bother me as much in this one as he does in the last one.
Really?
I don't think he's in this one as much as the last one. Now, what he's in is choice. But he's not in a lot of it. There's a lot of characters here now, and Leo does get relegated to the side.
Again, they're the Three Stooges. We want to theoretically see them together. I almost feel like him becoming a private investigator, does that smell of spinoff? Like, I feel like they could even make a Joe Pesci goes off and has his own Leo Getz movie.
Getz Shorty?
Yes.
Thank God we'll never find out.
Yes, if this movie was coming out in this day and age of universe building, there'd be like 9 Lethal Weapon spinoffs.
And Jet Li wouldn't be a completely bad guy. He'd be like Jason Statham in Fast and Furious, who can later go on to team up with Mel Gibson.
But this is not Jet Li on the boat. When they crash into the plot, they hear gunfire. Why?
They're executing people on the boat, either for their sickness or their misbehaving.
Yeah, I think this is how they justify Riggs and Murtaugh actually be. They're like, oh, guys, they're homicide detectives. Maybe you should have a homicide that they're actually investigating in this film to kick off the action. I think that's what it is. And also, I'm thinking Donner, Goonies, you hear those gunshots mysteriously when they shoot someone. It just took me back to that.
What the Coast Guard says is he's seen a lot of this, and they always kill one person to send the message. I would think you'd want to send the message back at the start of the voyage and not when you're 50 feet from the final destination.
I wonder how much of this, and I honestly don't know a whole lot about human trafficking.
That's good, Artie, good. I'm glad you don't.
Well, I perhaps should have researched it for this podcast, but they think they're coming to the States for American opportunity. They know they're going to be illegal immigrants, but they think they're coming here for a better life. And then, oh, you're going to be indentured servants. You have to work off the payment for coming here.
Maybe I know about this because I'm in LA and with the border so close. I mean, that is a pretty common thing. Those coyotes, they charge you an arm and a leg to bring you over the border. And then a lot of times they go, well, now you got to work that off as well. You paid us, but we just upped the price. And yeah, more or less kind of accurate, probably.
Yeah, it's a big real world theme. I remember reading newspaper articles. I'm guessing Richard Donner read those same articles and said, I have my message for my message movie. Here's the bumper sticker for this film.
If you'd like to hear the entire Lethal Weapon retrospective series, every episode is available right now. You can donate today and listen to them all this weekend, or you can spread them out. It's the great thing about podcasts. They are available to people who donate $35 or more through PayPal to Now Playing in the next few weeks. And with that, you get the four Lethal Weapon films, plus reviews of seven big films from 1989, Dead Poets Society, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and Do the Right Thing. Those reviews are all out now, coming later this summer, When Harry Met Sally, Parenthood, Sex, Lies, and Videotape, and The Abyss, plus some Sergio Leone films. We've already reviewed the entire Man With No Name trilogy, A Fistful of Dollars, For a Few Dollars More, and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And then, coming in July, we're going to be reviewing Once Upon a Time in the West and Once Upon a Time in America. So that is 16 in-depth movie reviews for a donation of $35 or more. Plus, if you've missed out on some of our older series, Men in Black, Child's Play, or all of the Quentin Tarantino films that we've reviewed, you can donate at higher levels for those. You can see all the details at nowplayingpodcast.com/donate. It's up to 43 bonus podcasts. If you count the Totally Free Tuesday shows that we have done every single week for years without missing a single week, this will give you two shows a week for most weeks throughout this summer, all the way into early September. So whether you're on the treadmill, sitting at work, or laying by the pool, you can get 43 bonus shows. And every dollar you donate goes to help this show grow. Everybody who works on this show, from the editors, graphic designers, and the hosts you hear on the show, work very hard to bring you the best show we can, and we'd like to see it go to bigger audiences, and we'd like to get a better website going, and every dollar you donate goes straight to those causes. If you've already donated, thank you for your support. If you don't have the means to donate, we completely understand, and we hope you continue to enjoy our Totally Free Tuesday shows. Got some big ones coming up: Toy Story 4, Men in Black 3, Annabelle Comes Home, Hobbs and Shaw, and some Stephen King leading up to It Chapter 2. That trailer looks awesome. And those shows are for free for everyone every single Tuesday. Thank you for listening. Thank you for giving us your consideration. We'll be back Tuesday with a review of Toy Story 3, and we'll talk to you then.
Spare me, son. It's over. There's no more heroes left in the world.
Your support helps keep Now Playing on the air.
I don't really know how to say this, but you really inspire me.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Semantics? Oh, I'm always up for semantics.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
That's why I don't have an ulcer, because I know when to say I don't give a fuck.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Now that's a real badge. I'm a real cop and this is a real fucking gun.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2019. All rights reserved. And no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Diplomatic immunity!
Just been revoked.